Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along as we begin our program by talking with you about ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. That's the wording for the acronym. And there are more than 6 million children here in the United States who have been diagnosed with ADHD, which to me is a shocking number. And many of those children are on medications to manage it. Today, we're going to talk with the author of a book titled The ADHD Advantage. And it's a book that helps people understand that there are alternative ways to manage that disorder, and Dr. Dale Archer is going to talk with us about that. He has many success stories of people who have used ADHD as a strength, and that's the way to look at it, including himself. Dr. Dale Archer is a medical doctor, board-certified psychiatrist, distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. Dr. Dale, glad you could join us today. Thank you so much.
Great to be here, Larry.
I really am enjoying your book. I haven't finished it all, but I've gotten through a lot of it, and it's a very helpful book in my mind. But let's start with some basics. ADHD, how do you define it?
Well, it's pretty much what the acronym would say. So attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So it's difficulty in paying attention, focus, concentration. Hyperactivity can be present, but it doesn't have to be. So in a nutshell, really, the name of the disorder says it all.
Yeah, I think I think you're absolutely right. And I think you have some shocking statistics about ADHD in your book. Within the last decade, what was it, 53% rise in diagnosis in this country?
Yeah, the diagnosis is skyrocketing, and as you said, 6 million kids from 5 to 17 with the diagnosis, about 3.5 million of those, so well over 50%, are medicated. Stimulant prescriptions are up fivefold since around 2000. So the diagnosis is skyrocketing now, about 11% of the child-adolescent population. It's up to 5% in the adult population. So certainly there's a diagnostic explosion that's taken place. It's being overdiagnosed just tremendously. And, of course, the knee-jerk treatment nowadays is you get the diagnosis, you get a pill. So yeah. It's being over-medicated.
Yeah, I think that's a really terrible, terribly unfortunate. I think that is the sort of the knee jerk reaction to it. Before I go any further, I want to have our listeners join in. You may have a child with ADHD. You may have experienced it yourself. I wish you'd call in and tell us about your experience. As we visit today with Dr. Dale Archer, call in at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show, and we'd certainly love to hear from you. You say that, Dr. Archer, that many people with ADHD have, what'd you call it, bingo brain.
Yeah. So bingo brain is a term that I came up with, and I think it really, in a lot of ways, sums up what ADHD is. So bingo brain represents the bingo balls, if you've ever been to a bingo parlor, and they're bouncing all around and bouncing off each other, bouncing against the glass jar that they're contained in. Those are thoughts in an ADHDer's brain. So those thoughts come out of nowhere, they're seemingly random, and they can be very distracting, and often that is the cause of the inattention and the inability to focus. But, so that's the downside. But the upside is that those thoughts, when they can be sorted out, and there was an attorney, Perry Sanders, who described it perfectly. He's the Michael Jackson family attorney, and I interviewed him for the book. And he said, you know, once I realized that those thoughts would be bouncing around, and every now and then I would catch a thought that would just be a totally different way at looking at a case, a totally different way of approaching a certain legal situation, then I realized that that was the source of my creativity. So if you can rein those thoughts in and understand that they're not really totally random, a lot of times they do have a relationship to a project that you're involved in or what you're thinking about. And if you can harness that, they're going to tell you a totally different way of looking at the picture. And that, of course, is the source of creativity and nonlinear thinking in the ADHD brain, which can be a tremendous strength.
Oh, absolutely. And you really do have a problem with calling it a disorder.
I do have a problem calling it a disorder because of the connotation that goes along with it. Look, I don't say that ADHD doesn't exist. It absolutely exists. But here's the problem. The way the diagnostic manual is set up now, you've got 9 symptoms. If you have 6 of those 9, you have ADHD. If you have 5 of 9, you don't. It's an on-off switch, and that's completely wrong. As I talk about in the book, ADHD occurs along a continuum from 1 to 10. If you have 1, you have extremely mild symptoms. If you're at 10 or even a 10+, you have severe symptoms. Those who are in the 9, the 10, and the 10+ realm, they have the true ADHD disorder, which needs treatment most likely, not always, and maybe even needs medication. But the problem now is we're taking those in the 5 to 8 range, we're slapping them with the exact same diagnosis, and we're treating them the exact same way as someone who's up at that 10-plus level who's so distracted they can't even get through the day without some type of help. That's the problem, and that's why when we say ADHD, we think of it as one size fits all, and nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, actually, and you talk about, it's really interesting to me to read about how people, somebody like Ty Pennington, for example, I mean, who went through an awful time as a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the unifying factors throughout the majority of the reviews in the book, whether it's a Ty Pennington or Howie Mandel, David Neilman, the founder of JetBlue, is that, and myself included, we do go through difficult times as a child. And I think it's mainly because we are going through a school system, and that's where the problems come from, primarily from the school system. That is a system that's designed to treat an individual to sit in their desk for 8 hours a day, study one subject at a time for an hour at a time, and then repeat 5 days a week. And for the ADHD brain, I mean, that's boring for a quote-unquote normal kid. For an ADHD brain, which is active and creative and wanting to think and be hands-on, I mean, that's like a death sentence. I mean, that's a horrible way. And so when we're forced to fit in to so-called normal education, we have tremendous problems. And often the first symptom of us chafing at the bit is the hyperactivity because we are easily bored with routine. Nothing can be more routine than traditional education, the way it's set up in America today. And that often causes the hyperactivity, which, of course, gets you sent to the principal's office, in my case. And I went to school way before medication was around to treat this. Back in those days, they used a paddle to maintain discipline.
Yeah.
Now the kids are, of course, slapped on meds and put back in the class and said, good, see, now you're a good little student. You're normal like everybody else, and you can do your work.
Yeah, and I guess it was kind of interesting to me to, when you talked about the fact that ADHD children, actually, once they get to college, if they make it to college or allowed to get into college, do much better because
much
of
better.
Choice and so forth.
Yeah, and you know, and I often tell parents when I'm giving talks or patients and kids, if you can survive your pre-college education, you're probably going to do okay. It's just getting to college. And college makes all the difference in the world. I mean, my son was a classic example. C students struggle through school, conduct problem. We opted not to medicate. When he gets to college, all of a sudden he's taking courses he likes. There's breaks in between the classes where you get out and get some exercise. He can study the way he wants. He doesn't have that two-hour study hall where he had to sit there and do his work. And, of course, multitasking is another ADHD strength. So he would often be doing writing a paper, doing a math assignment, and perhaps studying history while watching a sporting event on TV, and he became a straight-A student. And so, I mean, those stories, you hear that over and over and over again. If you can make it to college, yeah, you're probably going to do okay because you can do it your way. And also, you kind of figure out as you go what tricks and techniques work best for you, how your brain works and how you can study the best and what courses you really enjoy. And, of course, the ADHD brain, while bored with routine easily, can hyper-focus on things that it falls in love with and things and topics that are fascinating. So the hyper-focus is another huge advantage of the ADHD brain.
Let's turn to some callers. We have every one of our phone lines filled at the moment here. Brent in Hebron, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Hi. Am I on the air here?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Wonderful, wonderful show and a great topic. I have 7 children, and I have a gifted son that they want to, and they've classified as ADHD. And he's a mechanical genius, and they put him on medication. And the medication is just to dumb him down and steal his personality. I have a construction company, and in my ad, I am going to say, only ADHD need apply, because everybody that would be classified as ADHD is a hardworking and self-starting, and they're just phenomenal. This has been such a disruptive thing in my life because I'm anti the medication, and the school really pushed the medication, and it is nothing but stealing my son's personality.
Let's talk about that for a bit. Obviously, Brent does not want his son to be on medication, but comment on his experiences and go from there, Dr. Archer.
Well, I think his experiences are prototypical, and typically it is the school system that recommends the child for medication. Often, the child is doing well when they're at home. Yeah, they're rambunctious. Yeah, they may be a little disruptive, but nothing that the parents can't handle. They get into that school system, and all of a sudden, like I said, they're forced for 8 hours a day to sit still and to pay attention on subjects maybe they don't really find that interesting. And the next thing you know, they're a behavioral problem, and the school is saying, you need to see our professional, and it'll be a therapist perhaps, maybe a psychologist. They'll do a quick evaluation, say, yes, you have ADHD, and you need medication. And then parents buck the system and say, well, I don't want my son to be medicated. I really think that we can work and make this happen without it. Sometimes the schools will say, if you want him to come back to this school, he's got to be taking this medication because the teacher can't handle it. To be fair to the teachers, they've got 35 students in the class. Sometimes it's very difficult to be able to handle these kids. And fortunately, we've got some very forward-thinking schools, Beacon Hill in Boston, Fusion Academy around the country, who have realized that, you know what, they don't even think of this as a disorder. They think of it as a learning difference, and they teach differently. And we can only hope that this will trickle down to the public school system, because this story is something I hear over and over and over again. And the individuals in my book, while a few of them do take meds, the vast majority don't. And they don't for the very reason they say, my creativity was gone. My personality was stunted. I didn't feel like myself. Yeah, I could concentrate a little better, but at what cost? So this is a story that literally is the big problem that I see time and time again around the entire country when we're talking about medication in the school system.
Talking today with Dr. Dale Archer, who is the author of The ADHD Advantage, what you thought was a diagnosis may be your greatest strength. And we'll talking with him about not only ADHD, what you can do about it, too. He's got many suggestions and actually pretty strong advice for how to to deal with the ADHD if your child has it or if you have it as an adult. And I'm looking forward to visiting with him about that. You can join in again at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little bit later on in the show, 11:45 or so, we'll talk about how to best choose a child care provider. That coming up. But right now, visiting with Dr. Dale Archer, medical doctor, board-certified psychiatrist, distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, about his book, The ADHD Advantage, What You Thought Was a Diagnosis May Be Your Greatest Strength. Certainly looking forward to your comments as you listen in, your experiences at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Would certainly love to hear from you. There are many side effects to the medications. I think I talked a little bit about that, but there are alternatives to the medication, as you discuss in your book and as you were hinting at with our last caller.
Right. Well, there are two sets of alternatives. And the first, I would say, are the non-professional set. So obviously, the professional set would include various types of therapy, which we know are extremely effective: individual therapy, interpersonal therapy, family therapy, parental training, ADHD coaching. There's a whole list of therapies that have been shown to be amazingly effective, both for adults and for parents with kids and for the kids themselves. So that's in the professional realm. The non-professional realm is how you look at the ADHD brain and understanding the ADHD brain. So just some quick tips. Number one, most importantly, is exercise. High energy is one of the strengths of ADHD, and I think anyone who's been around an ADHDer understands that they are bristling and booming with energy. Exercise not only helps calm the brain down a bit, but it also increases a neurochemical dopamine, which is, the tone is low in the ADHD brain, so it boosts that up. So these schools, for example, they have exercise as an integral part of their school system. And we say that today when most public school systems around the country are cutting out PE, reducing recess, cutting down on the lunch break, really taking away the very things that are tremendous coping skill helpers for the ADHDer. So exercise is key. Sometimes in the schools, they actually, in between every class, they'll have a run around the building, or they go to the chin-up bar, or they have a variety of physical activities that they do to help the child refocus before the next class. Also, the classes are not a full hour in length. They're much shorter. They'll often do 15-minute subjects, then another one, and keep repeating throughout the course of the day. Homework would be the same way. You want to break it up into very short blocks. Remember, the ADHD brain gets bored easily, so a little 10 to 15 minutes of math, then a little exercise break, maybe a walk around the house or the block, then 15 minutes of history, another break, 15 minutes of science. These are just some quick tips that are extremely effective. The exercise, some type of exercise, is very, very helpful. So after school, whether it's on some type of organized sporting team that's representing the school, or it's intramural, some type of exercise really does help the ADHDer perform. And I could go on and on with the tips, but these are two that are very, very easy for the average parent to do that can make a tremendous amount of difference in terms of the child, and also for the adult ADHDer, for you as well.
And speaking of adult ADHD, Holly in Milwaukee has a comment for us. Hi, Holly.
Hi. I was just diagnosed this last year with ADHD. And I grew up as a kid with my teachers all writing comments about, gosh, you know, Holly has so much potential, but we just don't know. She's so smart. And I didn't do well in school. It was not that the information or the tests were hard. I mean, in eighth grade, I didn't do anything but take all my tests and get straight A's in algebra class, but they failed me because I didn't do the homework. It was just too much for me to sit down and do the homework. And nobody saw that, you know, there could be something else to be done. And as an adult, it's made a huge difference for me to understand this. And I do take medication, but I take it when I need it. So not every day, not all the time, but when I know there are specific things that I really need to be able to sit down and focus on and get them done within a certain structure, that's when I choose to take it. And I'm also a teacher, so I go to different schools, and I see different schools where they allow the kids to stand at their desk or have certain fidgets or things like that that help those kids get through the day and be able to attend and participate in ways that I wish my teachers had known for me to have. And I was just so down on myself as a kid and in high school because I didn't, my grades weren't great. I mean, I got out with, you know, like a 2.0, and I did great in college and have a master's degree and all that. And it's so true about how, you know, as you grow and you start to understand it, it does become easier, I think, because you can see those coping mechanisms you use and how those can be strengths and ways to process this. For my family, they never thought, they don't believe that I've got it or whatever, because I'm not that person who's bouncing off the walls. And that's everybody's picture of a hyperactivity person, I think, is that little boy that's jumping on the furniture. Mm-hmm. And I do it differently. I like am constantly fiddling my leg or my hand or whatever. And I explain it to my family, like, my brain is a pinball machine. There's that little ball just bouncing back and forth all the time. And I take everything in and I can't shut it down.
Well, thank you so much for calling. And I know Dr. Archer has a comment. Dr. Archer?
Yeah, I do, Holly. Your story is, again, classic. And I think to address the hyperactivity is not very common in girls. And so that when we're not sure why, but very often that leads to no diagnosis or an incorrect diagnosis in girls. And just now they're starting to get some research that's really going to hopefully help us pinpoint why that is. But in terms of the medication, I think you raise a very, very valid point. And some of the people in the book jump to mind, like Mark Neilman, who's an entrepreneur, David Neilman's brother, again, co-founder of Azul Airline down in Brazil, and David founded JetBlue up in America. Mark is on a regimen where he runs several businesses and is an entrepreneur. He has 3 days a week where he takes meds because he has to be able to do routine, what he calls the boring work that has to be done. So Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, that's when he takes his meds and gets that out of the way. The rest of the week, he doesn't take his meds, and that's when he does his creative thinking. So, you know, if the meds work for you, once again, I'm not opposed to meds. I just think that too many people are taking them, and as a whole, as society, we are over-medicated with respect to psychiatry in general, ADHD in particular. But that's a great way to do it. Take it when you need it. When you got to do something, you said, yeah, I've got 8 hours of routine tax stuff I've got to do. I've got to sit down and do it. Yeah, I think that's fine. You know, but don't take it all the time because, as you say, you know, you do need it for certain things. For others, you don't. Now, there are many, many people that have found that they do better as a whole when they don't take it at all, and that's fine, too. Interestingly, of the success stories in my book, there were only a very, very few that took it all the time. Most have reached the decision that, you know what, it's good a little bit of the time, or it's I need it some of the time, but I by and large do better when I'm not taking it. All of those are great strategies. It's all about knowing yourself and what works best for you.
Yeah, and Holly, thanks so much for calling. There's many people online. I want to give more a chance to join us. Samantha's been waiting a while. Samantha, thank you for waiting. Hello.
Hi, thank you. I had a question for the doctor about the symptoms correlating very strongly with ADHD and lead poisoning.
Yeah, there's no definitive studies that indicate that lead poisoning is a cause of ADHD per se. Obviously, lead poisoning causes a lot of bad things. And I think that if it were linked to ADHD, which to this point, I'm not aware of anything that has linked it. That would be one of the least of your concerns because of the other horrific things that can go along with that. But, you know, they've also tried to link it with sugar. That's been pretty much debunked. Sugar doesn't cause ADHD. Sugar doesn't cause hyperactivity. I will do one caveat there, that there are certain individuals that are super sensitive to sugar regardless, and it can get a sugar rush, and it really can cause a escalation of their activity. So in those cases, of course, know yourself, know your child, and remove the sugar if you know that there's a definitive problem with that. But it's not, as a general rule, going to be a cause for ADHD. There have also been studies looking at diet. Really have been no good studies that have linked ADHD to diet. One study that was small and indicates a possible link to the preservatives and the various chemicals that are in the food. Maybe, again, it was a weak link. It was one study, hadn't been replicated. But as of now, our best understanding of ADHD is genetic, no doubt about that, runs in families. For example, identical twins have if one has it, it's 80% likelihood that the other twin will have it. And depending on how strong your relationship is within the family, then, of course, your odds would go up with it. So that's the one thing that we know, is that it is indeed genetic. Everything else, the research is ongoing, but there haven't been any definitive links at this point.
Thank you for calling. We had a Facebook question from Samantha, who has an 11th grader, a son with ADHD, with an individualized education plan. They call them IEPs. Not on medication, but how do you handle behavior problems? They have a 90-minute block. His IEP allows him to get up and move around, but it can be distracting, and he gets frustrated and is asked to leave the room. Suggestions?
Well, first of all, she's lucky that she's in a school system that has the IEP, because a lot of them don't, and I think that's fantastic. Yeah, it's just recognizing that, hey, different brains learn different ways, and so why don't we cater to the individual instead of try to make everybody learn the same way? You know, I think it can cut both ways in terms of, well, okay, he gets frustrated and has to leave the room. Many of the schools, many of these cutting-edge schools, encourage the child to leave the room. And as long as that's not frowned upon, it's not looked at, oh, you're being bad, you have to leave the room because you're disrupting everyone else. Instead, it's spun such that when you're feeling restless and you're feeling you can't concentrate, it's okay to go out. One school had a chin-up bar that was right at the end of the hallway, and the students were allowed to go out and go to the chin-up bar and hang from it and do chin-ups and just kind of burn off a little steam that way. Some of them allowed the kid to take one quick lap around the inner hallway within the school before coming back to their desk. So if it's spun such that you're in control, you realize you're frustrated and can't really concentrate and are maybe acting out, and you've got the leeway to get up and to go out and to do that walk, then it can be a very big positive. If it's looked at as a punishment, you have to leave the room because you're disrupting the other kids, then that can be a huge negative. Often it's how we frame it that can make all the difference.
So you're inviting perhaps our emailer, Samantha, to talk with her teacher, with her son's teacher, or maybe with the school about sort of how they react and respond.
Yeah, I think then that conversation would go such that I want to thank you so much that our school does have the IEP, because I realize that many schools in this country do not. In fact, probably more don't than do. And so that's a big plus. So big kudos to the school for having that, or for the school system wherever she lives. But yeah, and then have that conversation, because, you know, oftentimes when you talk to these kids and you talk to the family, yeah, the ADHD is disruptive and a problem, but the negative implications, the label of you have a deficit and you have a disorder and your brain is broken and you're never going to be normal, that can be even more devastating to the child than the ADHD continuum of symptoms in and of itself.
You know, one thing we haven't done or I haven't asked you to do is, and I'm going to do it right now, is to talk about your book and how you have it organized. I think it's a very readable book and something that I'm an average person. The average person can read and actually enjoy reading and learn from. So how talk about your organization.
Well, you know, I mean, to me, it was just organized logically. And so it's got three, I guess, main sections, so or parts. And so part one would be exploding the myth. And basically, this is talking about the genetics. It's talking about the low boredom threshold. I discuss the various medications for ADHD, our society's pop a pill culture. The Explorer gene, which is, of course, the name that was coined for the ADHD gene, or the gene that's associated with ADHD, the dopamine transporter and dopamine receptor gene. And it was called the Explorer gene because it's found in the far reaches of the planet, in the Siberia and Alaska and Tierra del Fuego. They found a preponderance of this gene, indicating that these were wanderers back in prehistoric time, and they wandered away from the traditional village and went as far as they could go. And then in part two, talk about the strengths of ADHD, and then finally in part three, finding success in terms of how you can find those strengths and then make those strengths work for you and lead to a better, richer, and fuller life.
Yeah, you do offer many fairly concrete suggestions on what to do under a whole variety of circumstances, which I found quite useful. And we have Kay in Superior with a comment. Hi, Kay.
Hi, Larry. Dr. Archer, I'm a 73-year-old. I taught math and English. Those are my majors, and my master's is in counseling and other things. I think I had an anxiety disorder I have had all my life, except about 15 years ago I was at Mayo Clinic for about a month for my hand therapy, and I went to their library and viewed a video on ADHD, and I'm going, oh, adult ADHD, and that's me. And then through testing, I stopped eating gluten around then. And then the last few years, I've quit on the doctors with allergy, corn, soy, and mostly sugar. And I don't feel like I have that anxiety problem. However, in the last 8 years, I've started exercising more, like 40 minutes cardio and maybe an hour, hour and a half of other exercises a day. So,
maybe it's a combination of things, Dr. Archer?
Well, I think in a case like this, it's important to note that, once again, we look at studies, and studies tell us, okay, for the average person, does gluten cause ADHD? And the answer is no. However, you get constant individual cases where someone will say, you know, I eliminated gluten from my diet, and all of a sudden I can focus and concentrate better. So just because, as a general rule, something doesn't affect the general population doesn't mean that you don't need to know yourself and know what works for you. And the same with sugar. No link to sugar, but certainly there are isolated cases that people have told me. Yeah, I eliminated sugar from my son's diet. All of a sudden he was calm and could sit still and could focus better. So all of those things are worth looking at and considering in your case. Just because it doesn't work for the average doesn't mean that it does not work. And I think the big thing for you, the one thing that really jumped out at me that you said is you started exercising. There's no doubt I've had to pick one thing to help the ADHD or reach their potential more than anything else. It would be physical activity and exercise. It just seems to have an effect on our brain that is calming, allows us to hyper-focus, and just has so many benefits. I think more than the general population, exercise, I think, is the one thing that you said to me that is probably making more difference than anything else.
Ah, there we go. Thank you so much for calling. And I think you note in your book, too, there are many, many athletes with ADHD.
Yeah, there could be an ADHD sports athlete Hall of Fame. You know, there's one huge study that was just very, very interesting, found that in adult ADHD, Major League Baseball players had twice the incidence of the general population. And you look at superstars, probably my favorite is Michael Phelps.
Yeah.
Michael Phelps had a horrible time going through school. He was put on medication for ADHD at one point, begged his mom to get off of it. He hated the way it made him feel. Finally found salvation in the pool because he couldn't sit still in class. He was a poor student. He couldn't focus, couldn't concentrate, had a lot of negative self-esteem humped upon him because he was not successful. All of a sudden, he gets in the pool, and he finds something that he feels good about himself doing, and he's doing very, very well. So he was able to hyper-focus on swimming while his friends were out. They would go to swim practice and then go out and socialize after. All he wanted to do was swim because it meant it was his salvation, literally. He describes it as a salvation. So, of course, the net result is he goes on to be the biggest gold medal winner in the history of the Olympics. Not to say that that can happen to any ADHDer, but it just points to the fact that, without a doubt, and we have studies to back this up, that the athletes do have a greater chance of having ADHD than the general population. And it's also that athletics and exercise help the ADHD brain focus and concentrate more than it helps the general population.
Calvin wondered if, on a Facebook question, if ADHD has any correlation to the different forms of joint hypermobility.
Joint hypermobility?
Yeah.
I got to say, that's a new one. I've heard about a lot of people asking about a lot of links, but I'm not aware of any study looking at joint hypermobility. And, you know, to me, it just intuitively really doesn't make good sense because we know the genetics that are associated with ADHD and the dopamine system, and those are all genes that are that affect the way the brain works. I don't really see any connection between the joints and the brain.
Luke in Fond du Lac has a question. Luke, you have a quick question?
Yeah. My daughter is on ADHD medication, Concerto, extended release. And, you know, she does fine with it, and we're not really for having her on medication. But when she comes off of it, is there something we can do to manage, you know, when she comes off of it? Because sometimes it's terrible, sometimes it's bad.
She's 4 years old,
I'm definitely
going
to buy your book. Seven.
Yeah, everyone.
7 years old?
Yep.
Everyone's different in that respect. So, I mean, some people have withdrawal symptoms when they cough, some don't. I mean, that's a very individual type of situation that you'd have to discuss with your doctor. But I'll tell you one thing that I recommend to my patients and when I give talks is that, you know, if the medication's working, that's great. You know, I'm not going to say take your child off medication when everything is going great and they're doing better than they've ever done. But I will also say that, by and large, the medication is needed for school. And so on the weekends, on the holidays, in the summertime, talk to your doctor about, hey, can we do a drug holiday? Can we do a holiday off the med? Just to see, because as the child gets older, the symptoms tend to get less and less anyway. And in the old days, we used to say you outgrow your ADHD. We know that's not the case now. You have it for life. It's more like you learn how your brain works and how to manage it. So that's the one piece of advice I have there, is to talk to your doctor about drug holidays.
And thank you so much for calling. And Dr. Archer, thank you so much. I think we could go for another hour talking about your book, because there's so many things we haven't covered, the toolkits that you have in the book and so forth. I really appreciate you taking the time today to be with us, and perhaps we can do this again sometime.
It was my pleasure, Larry. I really enjoyed it.
Dale Archer, Dr. Dale Archer, is the author of The ADHD Advantage. And if you have some, I certainly recommend you take a look at this book. If you have relatives, family, or maybe you yourself have been affected with it, it's a book that I think could be very, very helpful. And so I really appreciate Dr. Archer taking the time to be with us today. Coming up, we're going to still talk about children. A lot of ADHD relates to children, but we're going to talk about children in a different fashion as it relates to choosing child care, choosing care for your children. And I know a lot of kids are going back to school right now, so there goes a little bit of the child care issue, but there's a whole lot more to talk about. In the state of Wisconsin, we have something really cool, I think, to talk about. Coral Manning, the Section Chief of Quality Initiatives, our guest, coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.